नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू अवर भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन कोर्स। टुडे वी आर बिगिनिंग द सेवेंथ कैंटो ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम। इन द लास्ट 30 एपिसोड्स वी हैव कवर्ड द फर्स्ट 6 कैंटोस ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम एंड इन द नेक्स्ट 4 एपिसोड्स वी विल कवर द सेवेंथ कैंटो ऑफ भागवतम। द सेवेंथ कैंटो हैज 15 चैप्टर्स एंड द फर्स्ट 10 चैप्टर्स डिस्क्राइब द ग्लोरियस हिस्ट्री ऑफ प्रहलाद महाराज एंड द लास्ट 5 चैप्टर्स डिस्क्राइब वर्णाश्रम धर्म। So there are 10 topics in Srimad Bhagavatam, as the shloka in the second canto says, Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanamutayah manvantaresha nukatha nirodho muktir ashrayah. Sarga is the primary creation done by the Supreme Lord. Visarga means the secondary creation done by Brahma, then the Manus and other descendants. Then sarga, visarga, sthanam is the positioning of various living entities in different planetary systems in this whole universe that we have discussed in the 5th canto, and sarga and visarga we have seen in the 3rd and 4th cantos very elaborately. The 6th canto presents this topic of poshanam very prominently, the 4th topic. Poshanam means the protection offered by the Supreme Lord to his devotees. Although sometimes accidentally the devotees might transgress the course of dharma. So the protection aspect is described in the 6th canto very vividly. And now the 7th canto of Bhagavatam prominently describes the topic of uti. Uti means inclination. Inclination means an inclination or an impetus to perform auspicious activities or inauspicious activities. Thus, uti or inclination is of two types, auspicious and inauspicious. In this 7th canto of Bhagavatam, we will see the auspicious inclinations of the pure devotee Prahlad Maharaj, and we will also see the inauspicious inclination of demon Hiranyakashipu, and we will also see the mixed inclinations of common people in the Varnashrama Dharma. So the story of Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu is presented in the first 10 chapters of 7th canto, while in the last 5 chapters, 7.11 to 7.15, we see the description of Varnashrama Dharma. And this entire 7th canto is a conversation that happened between Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj during the Rajasuya sacrifice that Yudhishthira Maharaj has performed in Indraprastha, where he has worshipped Lord Krishna in that Agra Puja in front of everyone. So that's the background in which this whole discussion between Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj happened. And Sukadeva Goswami quoted this conversation to describe this topic, uti. Of course, protection aspect or poshana aspect of the Lord is also there in the 7th canto. Like that, all the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam are present in all 12 cantos with various degrees of emphasis, but as our acharyas describe, the 7th canto prominently presents this topic of uti. So now we will see that in this canto the contents present descriptions of Shuddha Bhakti and Mixed Bhakti also. Shuddha Bhakti means pure devotional service offered by Prahlad Maharaj, and Mishra Bhakti means that bhakti which is mixed with tinges of karma, jnana and yoga. So there is karma Mishra Bhakti, means one's bhakti is mixed with some tendencies for fruitive activity. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means one's bhakti is mixed with the tendencies to cultivate knowledge. So all these are described in the 7th canto. So also we will see in the 7th canto, Prahlad Maharaj exhibits very wonderful Vaishnava qualities. So now For example, for a tree to grow, for a plant to grow, it has to first originate from a potent seed. So when you plant a potent seed in the soil, and if the soil is fertile, and if you regularly water that seed, then the plant can grow properly. So for the plant to grow nicely, the seed has to be potent. Second, the soil has to be fertile. Third, the watering process should also be there. So when the watering process and fertility of soil and potent seed are there, then plant will grow nicely. Similarly, the seed of bhakti will grow into a very beautiful bhakti creeper or bhakti lata, and then grow so profusely, so nicely, and reach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan if two things are met. One is the watering process of hearing and chanting. Second is the fertility of soil, which is compared to the development of Vaishnava qualities like humility, respect, tolerance, patience, all these things. So now the seed of bhakti has to come from a pure devotee, pure Vaishnava. So the seed of bhakti comes from a bona fide guru, an authentic guru. So when that seed of bhakti is planted in the heart of a sincere disciple, then if the disciple follows the instructions of the bona fide Vaishnava guru nicely, then his bhakti creeper will grow so nicely, you know, by regular hearing and chanting, by cultivation of Vaishnava qualities. So if only a seed and water are there, and if the land is not fertile, means you have potent seed, you have connection to a bona fide guru, and you are watering that seed of bhakti with the regular process of hearing and chanting. But if one does not have Vaishnava qualities like humility, tolerance, non-enviousness, patience, satisfaction, all these qualities, then what will happen is one could offend other devotees. So one may be proud of one's knowledge that is acquired by one's hearing or studying of scriptures. So watering process is going on nicely. But if one does not have proper etiquettes when one is dealing with other Vaishnavas, that could lead to offenses. So potent seed in devotional service, and the regular process of hearing and chanting, and cultivation of qualities like humility, tolerance, and all these things are also very important. And if we have only the potent seed and good Vaishnava qualities, but if we don't nourish ourselves with the regular process of chanting the holy names of the Lord and hearing the regular sadhana part, then one may just come to mode of goodness, but there is actually no growth of the creeper. And if one has only scriptural understanding and good qualities, and if he does not have connection to a bona fide Vaishnava sampradaya through a guru, means he does not get the seed of bhakti from a bona fide guru, then it's only a semblance of faith. That also is not that effective. So for our bhakti to grow nicely, we need all three. Connection to a bona fide guru, that's a potent seed, and watering process, which is compared to hearing and chanting, the regular sadhana. And the third thing is Vaishnava qualities, that's compared to fertility of soil. So we will see in Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto that Prahlad Maharaj has received the seed of bhakti from Narada Muni. And he regularly chanted the holy names of the Supreme Lord, and he remembered the Lord. Prahlad is considered a very great example of smaranam, or remembrance, or absorption in the Supreme Lord within one's mind. And also Prahlad has all good qualities. Brahmanyaha, Shila Sampanyaha, Satya Sandho Jitendriyaha. He is very respectful to Brahmanas. He is very truthful. He is very sense-controlled. All these good qualities are also there. We will see more of his qualities as we move ahead. So that's a kind of a prelude to this whole discussion of the 7th canto. Now, in the 6th canto, towards the end, we have seen the episode of Diti and Indra. So Diti became envious of Indra, and Diti wanted a son who can kill Indra. So with this desire, Diti served Kashyapa Muni very meticulously, and received, Diti received a promise from Kashyapa Muni that Kashyapa Muni would be fulfilling any desire that she had. So, Diti asked, "My dear husband, I want a son who can kill Indra." So then Kashyapa Muni tricked her and made her to perform devotional service. Then finally Maruts were born and the Maruts were accepted as demigods by Indra. We have seen all this in the sixth canto towards the end. But why Diti became envious of Indra in the first place? Because Diti had two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. This Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were killed by Lord Vishnu in his incarnations as Varaha and Narasimha. So because her sons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were killed by Lord Vishnu to favor Indra, Diti developed envious feelings towards Indra. So Parikshit Maharaj has been hearing this whole narration from Sukadeva Goswami and he got a doubt in the beginning of 7th canto. So his doubt was, yes, Vishnu is favoring, Lord Vishnu seems to be favoring the demigods, Indra, and Lord Vishnu is killing the demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu and other demons. So some people might perceive this as partiality in the Lord. So Parikshit Maharaj asked about this apparent partiality of the Supreme Lord, Krishna or Vishnu, in the beginning of the 7th chapter. That's the first chapter, God's apparent partiality. Now, Parikshit Maharaj says, Lord Vishnu is Sama, he is equal to all. He is Priya, he is very dear and affectionate to everyone. Suhrud, he is a genuine well-wisher of everyone. He is a good friend of everyone. But how can he exhibit some partiality like this, Vishamo Yatha? How can he exhibit partiality? And one thing is, if somebody is expecting some favor from a party, then he might show some partiality towards that person in anticipation of some future favor from this person. But the Supreme Lord Vishnu is self-sufficient. He has no benefit or interest to be derived from the demigods. So why should he favor the demigods? And also, the Lord is devoid of envy and anger. There is no udvega or vidvesha in the Lord. So, and he is devoid of all material qualities. Why should he at all favor the demigods and kill the demons? And by doing so, he is giving an opportunity for common people to misunderstand him that the Lord is partial towards some people only. So, can you please remove my doubt? In this way, Parikshit Maharaj asked a very intelligent question. Why does Krishna seem to be partial towards the demigods? That's the basic question. Then Sukadeva Goswami appreciated the question of Parikshit Maharaj nicely. He said, "Oh Sukadeva, oh Parikshit Maharaj, you have asked questions about Bhagavan. Hareh charitamad bhutam. So your inquiries about Bhagavan, about bhakti, and about bhakta. So your inquiries about the Supreme Lord, your inquiries about the process of devotional service and pure devotees. So your question is glorious and the answer to this question becomes the subject matter of interest for the entire humanity." So then Sukadeva Goswami began to explain. He says, the Lord is Nirguna. Nirguna means he is devoid of material qualities. He has all spiritual qualities only. He is not affected by the material modes and he does not have any material qualities. He is Aja, he is unborn, he is Avyakta, he is unmanifested, he is Prakritehi Paraha, means he is beyond the realm of this material nature, he is beyond the material influence, yet the Lord appears as a human being. So, the three material modes like Sattva Guna, Rajoguna, Tamoguna do not affect that Supreme Lord. So, now, these three modes, like Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, Tamoguna, they become prominent at different times and in different people. For example, there are devatas, the heavenly residents, devatas and sages, they are predominantly in mode of goodness. There is passion in them also, but they are predominantly in goodness. And like asuras, demons, they are predominantly in mode of passion or rajas. And yakshas and rakshasas, they are much more degraded. So they are predominantly in mode of ignorance or tamoguna. So different people are influenced by different material modes. But the Lord is devoid of all these material modes. So the Lord offers bodies to jivas and he conducts creation, maintenance and destruction through these material modes. The creation is carried out by mode of passion, and the maintenance is carried out by mode of goodness, and the destruction is carried out through mode of ignorance. And the incharges for these three things are Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. So the Lord manifests himself as Gunavatar, as Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, and carries out creation, maintenance and destruction through the material modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. But that does not mean that he is influenced by material modes. So time factor enhances. So when it is time for creation, passion is very prominent. So when it is time for maintenance, then goodness is prominent. When it is time for destruction, then this tamoguna becomes very prominent. So like that, because of the prominence of gunas, different people flourish or just go into background. So it's all about the time factor and not necessarily the Lord's partiality. Yet, the Lord has some partiality towards the demigods. That's why the Lord, although he is impartial, samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti na priyaha. The Lord says, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am equal to everyone, samoham sarva bhuteshu. Name dveshyosti, I don't envy anyone specifically, na priyaha. I don't hold anyone very favorable and very dear to me specifically. So the Lord very clearly says that I am equal to everyone. However, ye bhajinti tu mam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. But still, if some devotees are very dear to me, they worship me with all devotion, I show some extra favor towards them naturally. A student is listening a class from the teacher. So when the teacher is giving class, there may be hundreds of students sitting and listening to the class. But in that sense, the teacher is not partial to any student. Teacher is giving the same lecture to all the students, and all the students are listening to that lecture. And some students are very attentive in the class. They are noting down everything that the teacher is speaking, and they are also asking relevant questions to understand the subject matter more thoroughly. And the students may meet the teacher after the class also to inquire more, to get some reference materials, inquire about the subject. So definitely such students will derive more benefit from the teacher, and the teacher naturally gives more time and attention to those students who are more inquisitive and approaches the teacher. But there are some students who may be doing mischief in the class, or who are not very attentive, who may be sleeping, who may be passing comments on the teacher. So such people will not derive benefit. Similarly, the Lord is equal to everyone, samoham sarva bhuteshu. But devotees specifically worship the Lord. They offer prayers to the Lord. They express their love and affection and dependence on Krishna. So thus Krishna definitely gives more time and affection towards them. And Krishna may not give that much personal attention to those people who are neglectful towards him. So this partiality, so-called partiality, is not actually partiality. That is the reciprocal nature of the Lord. And this kind of reciprocal nature is common with everyone, not only God. So you can't call the Lord partial. So in this context, having described about the reciprocal nature of the Supreme Lord Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami quotes a conversation that happened between Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj in the Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. So once Yudhishthira Maharaj inquired Narada Muni about Rajasuya sacrifice. Here Sukadeva Goswami is quoting this discussion between Yudhishthira and Narada Muni, and the entire seventh canto is that their discussion only. Sukadeva Goswami presents their discussion only throughout the seventh canto, beginning from the 13th shloka. So Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni in the Rajasuya sacrifice. In the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yudhishthira Maharaj and all the Pandavas decided to worship Krishna, decided to offer Agra Puja, or first worship to Krishna, in that sacrifice. It's a very great honor. And that sacrifice is attended by so many sages and so many devatas and many kings and universal celebrities were there, assembled there. Everyone unanimously agreed that Krishna has to be given the first worship. But one person has an objection. That was Shishupal. So Shishupal was not happy that Krishna is worshipped. So Shishupal was so envious of Krishna, very angry towards Krishna. So Shishupal criticized Krishna in various ways in public. Although so many people were against Shishupal, Shishupal just went ahead and then he criticized Krishna. And at one point when he crossed his limits, way beyond certain limits, Krishna released his Sudarshan Chakra and beheaded Shishupal. So Shishupal died in front of everyone. And when Shishupal's head was cut by Sudarshan Chakra, an effulgence came from Shishupal's body and entered Krishna's body, indicating that Lord Krishna has given liberation to Shishupal. And everybody could notice this. Yudhishthira Maharaj also could understand that Shishupal was liberated by the mercy of Lord Krishna. Then this Yudhishthira Maharaj had this question. Narada Muni was sitting there. Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni, "Narada Muni, I have one question. Shishupal blasphemed Krishna. He criticized Krishna. He was so envious of Krishna. Why did he get liberation? And on the other hand, we had this Vena. We discussed about Vena in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. Vena also blasphemed the Lord. He said, I am God. You should worship me. You should conduct all sacrifices to please me." Like that Vena was telling all the sages and Brahmanas. So Brahmanas cursed Vena. So Vena fell down. Vena did not get liberation. So when Vena blasphemed and criticized the Lord, he was not liberated, but Shishupal was liberated. So what is this? And Shishupal and Dantavakra, they were so blasphemous, their body was not affected by white leprosy and they did not go to hell. How did this happen? Shishupal got Salokya Mukti and Samipya Mukti. Samipya means he is very close to the Lord in the Vaikuntha planet. Salokya means going to the same planet. So Shishupal got this mukti. So my intelligence is getting disturbed like a lamp in a windy place. When you keep a lamp, an oil lamp, in a place where there is a lot of wind, the flame starts moving like this. So as you are seeing in that picture. So our Yudhishthira Maharaj said, my intelligence is also moving like this. Can you please answer this question? Then Narada Muni explained so wonderfully. He said that, my dear Yudhishthira Maharaj, ignorance is the cause of experience of dualities. This honor, dishonor, criticism, praise, happiness, distress. So these are all dualities. Heat, cold, this and that. So all these are experienced by people who are in bodily conception. So if some people identify themselves with their bodies, they start discriminating between other people as friends and enemies, and they take to criticism and praise. So he is my friend, I will praise him, appreciate him. And he is my enemy, I should criticize him, blaspheme him, or envy him, or do some act that can create an obstacle towards his progress. So like that, some people discriminate between people. That's because of bodily conception. But the Supreme Lord does not have such material bodily conception. He does not hate anyone, nor does he praise anyone on a material plane. So, and one more thing is, if other people, common people in bodily conception, are praising the Lord, are hating the Lord is not affected by such criticism or praise. If someone is lovingly glorifying the Lord is very happy with him. But on a material plane, if somebody is criticizing the Lord is unaffected by it. So that does not mean that, though, anyways, the Lord is not affected by criticism, so we can blaspheme him. No, he is not affected, but by criticizing, we will get affected. So what is wrong in criticizing the Lord if he is not affected? No, criticizer will get bad karma. He may even go to hell also. However, if one criticizes the Lord, and if that critical mentality takes one to deep absorption in Lord, in Krishna, then one could get liberated also. Sukadeva Goswami, Narada Muni speaks a beautiful shloka, 26th shloka. He says, Tasmad vairanu bandhena nirvairena bhayenava snehat kamenava yunjat kathan chinnekshate prathak. Tasmad vairanu bandhena. Therefore, by enmity, vaira is enmity. Nirvairena, by devotion. Bhayena, by fear. and snehat by affection or friendship, kamena with lust, vayunjati, if we keep our mind on Krishna with any of these emotions, some are positive emotions, some are negative emotions. But if we connect to Krishna even with positive emotions or negative emotions, the Lord is unaffected. Now, if criticism of the Lord is of two types. You can see the chart. One is favorable criticism, second is unfavorable criticism. Now, in Vrindavan, all the gopis would go to Mother Yashoda and lodge so many complaints against Krishna. So, some gopis would come and say, Mother Yashoda, your son Krishna has come to my house, he has stolen my butter. And some other gopi would say, he has come to my house and he has pinched our babies. And some other gopis would say, he passed urine and stool in our clean houses and then contaminated the whole house. And some other gopis would say, he has broken our pots, he has distributed our butter to the monkeys. And when the monkeys are not eating, your Krishna says that your butter is so third class that even monkeys don't eat them. So like that, Krishna does a lot of mischief in Vrindavan and all the gopis would criticize Krishna and complain about Krishna in front of Mother Yashoda. But that criticism of Krishna is done with so much of love and affection, motherly love and affection. In fact, all the gopis wait for Krishna to come to their houses and steal and do whatever mischief that he wants. So that is loving criticism. So that's a transformation of prema that gopis do. And Madhurya gopis also do sometimes. And there is unfavorable criticism. This criticism is done out of envy, not love. So, but that envious criticism of the Lord makes the person totally get absorbed in Krishna. Then that could release one from bad karma. One can be liberated also. Shishupal was constantly criticizing Krishna, and with that critical mentality, he was always thinking about Krishna only. He's always thinking bad about Krishna, but he's always thinking of Krishna. And Krishna neglected that bad part there, and he only saw that absorption of criticism, absorption of Shishupal in the memory, in the remembrance of Krishna, and Krishna liberated Shishupal. So, of course, this kind of absorption in Krishna with a negative feeling like criticism or envy or hatred or anger or fear is not a recommendation. Although one can connect with the Lord even through that negative emotions, and if those negative emotions towards the Lord will take one into deep absorption in the Lord, one is getting liberated. So what will happen if we get absorbed in the Lord with a positive emotion? That's the message that we need to take. But if one's criticism of the Lord or any negative emotion towards the Lord does not give rise to absorption in the Lord, one will go to hell. Okay. So this Shishupal is a person who had a continuous enmity towards the Lord. That is Vaira. Nirvaira, example is the Vrajavasis. They had pure devotion. They had no enmity towards the Lord. Bhaya is lust with fear of transgressing moral codes. So some people, like gopis of Vrindavan, they had attraction towards Krishna, but they had some fear of transgressing material modes, material moral codes and social customs. But they transcended that fear also. And Rukmini also. Rukmini just went beyond. She had attraction towards Krishna, but she went beyond that fears of the social customs, and she wrote a letter, very boldly she wrote a letter to Krishna and asked Krishna, you come and kidnap me. And Krishna came and kidnapped. So whatever way, if one connects to the Lord, yena kena prakarena, if one's mind is totally absorbed in Krishna, that will definitely enable one to attain the shelter of Krishna. And Narada Muni, out of his humility, he says that actually the demon's absorption in Krishna is greater than the devotee's absorption in Krishna. It's not a literal statement. Out of humility, Narada Muni says, the absorption of demons like Shishupala in Krishna with their negative emotion is much greater than my absorption in Krishna with a positive emotion. So, but it's only out of humility. Just like Kaviraj Goswami says, Kaviraj Goswami, the transcendental author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that I am worse than Jagai Madhai. That does not mean he is like that. he is a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Srimati Radharani is so humble that she recommends another devotee. See, this devotee is so meticulous in devotional service. So you accept him. Radharani is so humble. So like the devotee may, a pure devotee may just minimize his level of devotion and appreciate someone else's. But that does not mean that we minimize their position. So Narada Muni said like this. But the essential point here to understand is, when there is full absorption in the thought of Krishna constantly, then Krishna will show mercy and Krishna will take that person close to himself. So if that absorption happens through negative emotion also, Krishna is kind enough to liberate that person. But what will happen if one gets absorbed in Krishna with a positive emotion, with pure love? That's the message that we need to take. Gopis are constantly absorbed in Krishna. Yadohane vahanane mathanopalepa prinkankhanarbharudito akshanamarjanado gayanti chaina manurakta dhiyo shrukanthyo dhanyavrajastriya urukramachitta yanaha. So all the gopis of Vrindavan, whether they are milking the cows or threshing the grains or doing other household activities or swinging on swings or taking care of crying babies or sprinkling water in their courtyards or whatever they may be doing, they are constantly absorbed in the thought of Krishna. They are the perfect example of Krishna consciousness, unalloyed, pure, unflinching, thorough Krishna consciousness. So gopis are absorbed in Krishna. Yashoda Mata is so absorbed in Krishna. In the beginning of Damodar Lila, we see that she was churning butter for Krishna with that Padmagandha milk, and she was engaging her senses in Krishna's service, and she was engaging her words in singing Krishna's pastimes, and she was engaging her mind in remembering Krishna. Her body, mind and words are completely dedicated to Krishna consciousness. That's the glory of Yashoda Mai. So even an insect, sometimes a grass worm could be caught by a bee, and because of constant absorption in that bee, in thinking of that bee, this grass worm could turn into a bee. So if a material being, living being could become like that, could attain a form by constant absorption, what to speak of absorption in Krishna? This example is also given. Constant thinking of the Lord in any way frees one from this material entanglement and regains one's spiritual body. That's why in the 30th sloka, Narada Muni says, Kama dveshad bhayat snehat yatha bhaktyeshvare manaha aveshatad agham hitva bhavatastad gatim gataha bhavastad gatim gataha. Kamad means through lust, dveshat through envy, or bhayat through fear, and snehat with affection, bhaktyeshvare manaha with devotion. Aveshatad agham hitva, if one gets absorbed with any of these five emotions in the Lord, then one will be relieved of all sinful proclivities or reactions, and one will attain liberation. So who are the examples for these five emotions? Gopyat kamaha, 31st shloka says, Gopyat kamaan bhayat kamso dveshat chedyadayo nrpah sambandhat vrishnayah snehat yuyam bhaktya vayam vibho. Gopyah kamad. Gopis got absorbed in Krishna with attraction, lust. That's not lust actually, that's pure spiritual love. But it resembles lust. Gopyat kamat. Bhayat kamso. Kamsa was absorbed in the thought of Krishna constantly for several years with fear. Because that Akashvani told that Kamsa would die in the hands of the eighth child of Devaki. And eighth child of Devaki is Krishna. Kamsa is constantly remembering Krishna. Oh, Krishna will come and kill me like that. Dvesha chaidyadayo nrupaha. Chaidya is this Shishupal. He is the king of this Chedi kingdom. So he had dvesha towards Krishna. He had envy towards Krishna. He was absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna with envy, and he was liberated. Then sambandhad vrishnayaha, and yadus were liberated because of family connection. Yuyam bhaktya vayam vibho. And general devotees like Pandavas and Narada Muni, they are absorbed in Krishna through devotion. So now any of these five ways, or many other ways are also there to get connected to Krishna. But all these negative emotions are not recommendations, but they are, we can only recognize that Krishna is so merciful to even those people who connect with him with negative emotions. So somehow or the other, we have to concentrate our mind on Krishna. That's the take home message. And it's a great recommendation that we have to absorb in remembrance of Krishna with a positive emotion, with love, with affection. And now, coming to the specific example of Shishupal and Dantavakra, as Yudhishthira Maharaj indicated, Narada Muni explains that the Shishupal and Dantavakra were actually associates of Lord Vishnu. They were cursed to become demons or develop this demoniac nature or develop anger or hatred towards Krishna because the four Kumaras cursed them. So we discussed in the third canto of Bhagavatam in our Bhagavat Pravaha series that these four Kumaras once went to this Vishnu's abode, and Jaya and Vijaya, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, they stopped these four Kumaras, and four Kumaras cursed Jaya and Vijaya to go to the material world. So they went for three births. So now Vishnu, our Yudhishthira Maharaj, has been hearing this whole narration from Narada Muni, and he asked Narada Muni, who can curse Vishnu Bhaktas? How can Vishnu Bhaktas or associates of Vishnu from Vaikuntha fall down to this material world? It's unbelievable. So can you please tell me? Then Narada Muni narrated. These four Kumaras went to the Vaikuntha, and the Jaya and Vijaya blocked their entrance, and immediately four Kumaras cursed them to go to the material world. So they went to the material world for three births. And first, this Jaya and Vijaya entered the womb of Diti. We have discussed it in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Diti united with Kashyapa at a wrong time, in the evening time, which was very inappropriate. So Jaya and Vijaya entered her womb in the form of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. That's the first birth of Jaya and Vijaya. And Narasimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, and Varahadev killed Hiranyaksha. So that's the first birth of Jaya and Vijaya. In the second birth, they became Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Then Lord Ram killed both of them. And in the third birth, they became Shishupal and Dantavakra, and Krishna killed both of them. And they were liberated finally after three births. And in their first birth, Jaya and Vijaya became Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyaksha specifically tormented his noble son Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad, little Prahlad, who was just 5 years old, who was a great Vishnu, great devotee of Vishnu. He was tormented by Hiranyakashipu in various ways. So in this way, Narada Muni narrated the three births of Jaya and Vijaya to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Now Yudhishthira Maharaj had a question. He asked, how did Prahlad become a great devotee? Prahlad was the son of Hiranyakashipu, who was a great demon. How can the son of a great demon become a great devotee? Yudhishthira Maharaj asked like this. And because Prahlad is such a noble and gentle personality, why did Hiranyakashipu try to kill Prahlad or torment Prahlad in various ways? So when Yudhishthira Maharaj asked this question at the end of the first chapter, in the beginning of the second chapter, our Narada Muni begins the whole narration, the background of the birth of Prahlad Maharaj. So the first chapter described about the Supreme Lord's apparent partiality and how he is, although he is killing the demons, still he is liberating those demons and giving them his mercy. So we have seen all that in the first chapter. Now we will begin the second chapter. So in this chapter, Narada Muni says that when Varahadev killed Hiranyaksha, then Hiranyaksha's brother Hiranyakashipu became so angry, so furious, so disappointed that my brother died because of Vishnu. So he was biting his lips and he was gazing at the sky with angry eyes, and he was making the whole sky smoky, and with terrible teeth and fierce glances and frowning eyebrows, he started speaking to all his demonic associates. He told, "Oh Namuchi, oh Paka, oh Ilvala, Viprachitti, Puloma." These are the names of so many demons who were the associates of Hiranyakashipu. He was instructing all these demons. He said that this Vishnu has sided the demigods. Lord Vishnu is supposed to be impartial, but he is exhibiting partiality towards the demons. He was supposed to be impartial and just like a restless child, take sides of people. For example, mother chastises the child, then the child goes to father. And father chastises the child, and the child goes to mother. So he takes sides. Because he is innocent or ignorant, the child tends to take sides of those people who pamper him. Sometimes chastisement is required. The child is eating a lot of sweets or chocolates, which is not good for his health. So now the father might say, don't eat so much. Because the father is saying something against the interest of the child will go to mother or some other relative or some other elder and take shelter and then want to take chocolate. So a restless child may take sides just to fulfill his own purposes. He does not have much intelligence, developed intelligence. So Vishnu is behaving like a restless child. And he is taking side of the demigods and killing the demons. And Vishnu is influenced by Maya, he says like this, our Hiranyakashipu. And he says, I will kill Vishnu. If I kill Vishnu, my brother will be pleased. And if I kill Vishnu, the demigods who derive their power from Vishnu, they will become powerless. I will also stop sacrifices. Then he told all the demons, you should go and then kill all the brahmanas and destroy all the brahmanas and cows. No yagnas must be performed. Then if yagnas are not performed, demigods will not get their sacrificial oblations and the demigods will die. So in this way, Hiranyakashipu has made a master plan to kill Vishnu, to kill the demigods and to kill whole Vedic culture and Brahmanical culture and cows and Brahmanas, everything, and stop sacrifices. Then all the demons, they were naturally very much inclined towards such disastrous activities, destruction. So now that they are instructed by their king, Hiranyakashipu, they became extremely enthusiastic and they went into the city, went into different places. And they started destroying all the brahmanas and their yajnas and their yajnashalas, and they destroyed bridges and city walls and gates and cut fruit trees, and they made people give up Vedic culture. So in this way they created a lot of destruction. After instructing all these demons to destroy the Vedic culture, Hiranyakashipu went to his family members, and all the family members of Hiranyakashipu, his mother and his brother's wife, they were all lamenting for the death of Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha has been recently killed by Varahadev, and Hiranyakashipu wanted to console his family members because they were lamenting. So Hiranyakashipu starts speaking philosophy now. He says, my dear family members, do not lament for the death of a hero. My brother Hiranyaksha did not die like a coward running away from the battlefield. He died on the battlefield facing the enemy with all courage. So death on the battlefield in the hands of an enemy is a glorious death. So you should not unnecessarily lament for it. And you may be lamenting that you are not having the association of Hiranyaksha now. He has been with you till now and now he is not with you. Maybe you are missing him. But please understand that all the people in this world, as you are seeing in this picture, they are like travelers who gather in a restaurant. So in a hotel, in a restaurant, people may come and sit and have some food and then they get dispersed. So while taking meal, 100 people may be sitting in the restaurant at one point, but these 100 people, after a few minutes, they will go to their respective destinations. Same is the case with our association. So we associate with our family members for just one lifetime maximum. Within that one lifetime also, we may not be able to stay together forever throughout the life. So there is separation always. So the association of two embodied beings is so brief. Hiranyakashipu is saying all this. The philosophy that he is speaking in this context is valid. But although the demons also speak philosophy, they fail to apply that philosophy. Although he is speaking against bodily conception now, apparently, here, But Hiranyakashipu, after consoling the relatives, he gets absorbed too much into bodily conception and he wanted to take revenge against Vishnu. While he is philosophically reconciling the whole situation while consoling his relatives, he developed a revengeful attitude towards Vishnu later. So that's the nature of demons. They cannot be consistent in their moods. And Hiranyakashipu further says, soul is eternal, soul is inexhaustible. The bondage and transmigration is only because of the misuse of slight independence of the soul. And mind gets agitated just like we see the reflection of a tree in water. Or just like a person may see a dream during his sleep. Similarly, our life in this whole material existence is like a dreamy situation. It's like reflection on the water. The soul is eternal. The material body and all the relationships and possessions that come through this material body are all so temporary. They have an end. So like that, Hiranyakashipu speaks a lot of philosophical analysis and he speaks the science of soul. Then Hiranyakashipu gives the example of a king named Suyagna. You can see that picture where the king died and all his wives were lamenting for the death of the king and some people were waiting there. So basically, there was a great king named Suyagna and he fought in a war and in that war he died. And all the family members of that Suyagna, especially his wives, they came and they were lamenting, they were crying because of the death of their husband. They were feeling separation from their husband and they were not allowing the dead body to be taken away. So the dead body has to be burnt. These people are not allowing the funeral rites to happen because they were just lamenting surrounding the dead body. So, in that context, Yamaraj came. Yama, the Lord of Death, has come there in the form of a small boy. You can see in that picture. He came in the form of a small boy and he started speaking to this lamenting wives of Suyagna. He said, how amazing it is to see older people who have seen hundreds and hundreds of deaths in their lives. They are lamenting, they are bewildered so much. They are so confused because of this one death. They have seen so many deaths earlier. Why they are getting so bewildered? So there is no exception to death. Anybody has to die. Everybody has to leave their material body one day or the other. And we have seen so many deaths. And we are seeing so many deaths. We will be seeing so many deaths. And we have to die also one day. But still, when death happens, one gets bewildered. Yamaraj is expressing his surprise there. And although we are children, so Yamaraj just presented himself as a small child who is neglected by everyone. So like an orphan. So we are children, we are unprotected by parents, we are weak, we could be vanquished at any time by ferocious animals. Still we are very confident because we are confident that the Supreme Lord will protect us. Just like the Supreme Lord has protected us within the womb. When the child is within the womb, who is protecting the child? Yes, you may say mother is protecting. In one sense, that may be true. But actually, the child within the womb, how he is growing and how he is transforming, how the whole development of the child is not within the hands of mother or anyone. The Lord has created a natural system by which the child grows and comes out from the womb of the mother at certain point. So, now the Supreme Lord is the cause of all creation, maintenance and destruction. And the whole entire creation is just like a plaything. So the Lord is competent to destroy and protect everyone. So we have to just accept the destiny or fate and the inevitable happenings in this world. So one should not lament so much about the loss or profit. So a householder may just live in a house. And he may identify himself with the house, but the house is not the person. So the person is different and the house is different. Similarly, there is a soul residing within the body. So the body is different, the person is different. So the person is never destroyed. The body can be destroyed at any time. So one should not unnecessarily lament for the death of a person. So, somewhat the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter where Krishna speaks about the science of soul and one should not lament for the death of a person. So all these teachings are there in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita also. Somewhat similar philosophy is presented in the in this discussion of Hiranyakashipu with his relatives also. So now there are so many other examples that he gives. For example, sky is all pervading, but it never mixes with anything, he says. So and this whole lamentation is contradictory. So the body is in front of you. So our interaction with another person is through the body. And after the death of the person, the body is still lying there and people are crying. And why they are crying? Because the person left. So the person whom you are interacting with is right in front of you. No, this body cannot animate. The body cannot speak out. Body cannot interact. Body cannot reciprocate with my love and affection. So the person left. So this body is only there. So now, although we are interacting through this body only, with this body only till now, but we can easily understand that the soul has left the body. And that soul who has left the body, we have never seen that person. So why are you lamenting? This whole lamentation itself is contradictory. The person whom you are interacting with now till now is right in front of you. And the person who has left that body, you have never seen him. So why are you unnecessarily lamenting like that? Our Yamaraj, in the form of this small boy, speaks a lot of things to the wives of Suyagna, and then he gives a very beautiful story of Kulinga birds. You can see two birds, Kulinga birds. So once there lived a couple of birds. There is one male bird, there is a female bird, and they had some small baby birds also. Somehow, one hunter came and the hunter captured the female bird. And the male bird saw it, and the male bird was sitting on the tree, and then the male bird started lamenting for that female bird. Oh my, though providence is so merciless, my wife is like half of my body, and the baby birds, our small birds are very helpless now. So like that, the male bird started lamenting for the female bird a lot. Then, as the male bird was lamenting like this, the hunter shot an arrow and killed the male bird also. So just by lamenting for the death of that emotions are there, feelings are there, tears will come naturally when somebody dies. One cannot be so hard-hearted that one cannot shed some tears also at the death of a close friend or a relative. But one should not just continuously lament only and forget one's own duties. This male bird lamented for the female bird a lot, that the male bird ignored his own safety. So as the male bird was lamenting for a long time, the hunter shot an arrow on the male bird and the male bird also died. So lamentation is natural, but the male bird could have been little alert and diligent enough to protect his own life, and then he could have flew away, but he did not do that. So now Yamaraj spoke about this story, that my dear, this wives of Suyagna, you are lamenting so much for the death of your husband, even if you cry for 100 years, the Suyagna will not come back. And while lamenting for 100 years, you will die. Your life will end. So you will have to spend a lot of time, valuable time of human life, in lamenting for something which is not worth lamenting. Yes, lamentation is there. So one can lament for a while, and then one should get back to one's responsibility and perfect one's life and perform bhakti and perfect one's life. One should not lament for such a long time. That's what he says. So after and Hiranyakashipu has been narrating all these stories. Hiranyakashipu spoke about the science of soul and the temporary nature of material body. And he quoted this example of the story of Yamaraj enlightening these wives of Suyagna. And then he consoled his relatives. So that completes the second chapter, and we enter the third chapter. After consoling the relatives in such a very philosophically sound manner, Hiranyakashipu developed a desire to be unconquerable. My brother died in the hands of Vishnu, so I should never die in hands of anyone. So Hiranyakashipu developed a desire to be unconquerable. I should not have any old age. I should not have any death. I should become even the ruler of Brahmaloka also. So with this desire to become immortal Hiranyakashipu went to a valley in Mandara mountain range, and he stood on his toes and he raised his arms upward and he was looking towards the sky, and in this way he performed very severe austerities. And because of his severe austerities for such a long time, light and fire emanated from his head, and all the rivers and oceans got agitated, and the globe started trembling, and the stars and planets started falling, and all the directions were ablaze with fire, and all the demigods were completely disturbed. So all the demigods, the devatas, went to Lord Brahma and told Brahma about the intentions of Hiranyakashipu. Oh, my dear Brahma, this Hiranyakashipu is planning to occupy your post. And he has, when he occupies your post, and he will reverse the results of pious and impious activities. So when somebody does pious activities, he needs to be rewarded. And when somebody does impious activities, he needs to be punished. But Hiranyakashipu will do the opposite. Your post is very auspicious. How can a demon occupy your post? And Hiranyakashipu's intentions are very heinous. So can you please do the needful? Then Brahma says that, okay, I will go and meet Hiranyakashipu. So Brahma went to Hiranyakashipu on his beautiful swan carrier. So Hiranyakashipu was doing his intense austerities for a material purpose. He was controlling his senses. He was controlling his mind. He was controlling his food intake. And he was just standing on his toes for such a long time, and he was doing tapasya. And by the time Brahma came, Brahma could not even recognize this Hiranyakashipu. Because half of the body of Hiranyakashipu, you can see in that picture, half of the body of Hiranyakashipu was eaten up by insects and ants. And only his ribs and his bones were there. His flesh was not there at all. Somehow Hiranyakashipu was maintaining his life airs in those bones. Because of his strong determination within his mind, Hiranyakashipu was completely oblivious to his physical situation, and he was so totally absorbed in his intention or in his ambition to become immortal. Then Brahma came, he was astonished, and then he revived the body of Hiranyakashipu. Brahmaji even said, "My dear Hiranyakashipu, you are circulating your life air within your bones. Even great Bhrugumuni also could not do such austerities. And you have done these austerities for 100 celestial years, not for 1 or 2 months. 100 celestial years you have done these austerities, and your determination is unconquerable. And your determination conquered me. I am very pleased with you, and my audience will never go in vain. So you can ask any benediction that you want from me." Then Hiranyakashipu intelligently asked Brahma, "My dear Brahma, just make me immortal. I don't want death." So, and knows, Hiranyakashipu knows that Brahma cannot give the benediction of being immortal, because Brahma himself is not immortal. He also has a lifespan that ends at one day. So Hiranyakashipu very cleverly said that, "My dear Brahma, I do not want death from any jiva created by you. Any living being created by you should not be able to kill me. And I should not be killed inside or outside a residence. And I should not be killed during the day or during the night. I should not be killed on the ground or in the sky. And I should not be created by any being who is not created by you also. Who is created by you, who is not created by you. And I should not be killed by any weapon. I should not be killed by any human being or animal or any living being or non-living thing, or by any demigod or demon or snake from lower planets. Nobody should kill me." So like that, by enumerating so many conditions in his benediction, how to avoid death, Hiranyakashipu thought that I need not die. It's a very clever way of getting a benediction of being immortal. And he also says, "I should not have any rival." Okay. And I want soul proprietorship and lordship over all living entities and over all presiding deities. I want all the mystic powers. Like that, Hiranyakashipu asked so many benedictions in one shot. And Brahma said that nobody has asked that kind of benedictions, but I bless you because you have pleased so much pleased me so much with your austerities. I bless you. So that completes the third chapter. We enter the fourth chapter. And Brahmaji gives the benedictions asked by Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu got a very lustrous body. And now that he practically became immortal, or he will not meet his death through any of these external sources, he became so confident. And his envy towards Vishnu only developed so much. Earlier, Hiranyakashipu began his austerities with envy towards Vishnu, because Vishnu has killed his brother Hiranyaksha by taking the form of Varahadev. And now Hiranyakashipu went all over the universe. He conquered all the three worlds and he resided in the heaven. The heaven is so opulent. The heaven is the abode of Lord Indra, and heaven is so opulent, and Hiranyakashipu started staying in that heaven. And all the demigods had to bow down in front of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu would chastise them, would threaten them for no reason. He would just completely dominate them. And he's always drunk. His eyes were rolling in intoxication. And except Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, everyone worshipped him. And apparently even Narada Muni also would come and praise him. And Hiranyakashipu accepted all the sacrificial shares for himself. And Hiranyakashipu even controlled nature. He controlled all the three planetary systems and all the demigods. That's one thing. And he started controlling the nature also. Earth has to provide all food grains without plowing the field. Without doing any effort in agriculture, Earth has to provide all the grains. And cows must provide abundant milk. And the outer space should be decorated with wonderful phenomena to please Hiranyakashipu. And all the seven rivers and seven oceans and rivers, they offered their jewels and pearls to Hiranyakashipu. And all the valleys became fields of his pleasure. And all the trees and plants would give him flowers and fruits in all seasons, profusely. And he directed the qualities of pouring water, drying and burning without assistance of demigods. And he would adjust even the rise of his eyebrows. The sun and the moon would adjust their temperature in such a way that Hiranyakashipu gets some cooling or whatever he desires. But although Hiranyakashipu controlled the entire nature, controlled all the devatas, controlled the entire universe, still Hiranyakashipu was always dissatisfied because of his uncontrolled senses. Unrestricted engagement or indulgence in sense gratification will not give any satisfaction. It will only give dissatisfaction. Hiranyakashipu has controlled his senses a lot for 100 celestial years to get a material benediction. And after he received that material benediction, he became a victim of uncontrolled senses. Before getting these boons, material boons, there is full sense control. And after getting these material boons, there is total indulgence in sense gratification. There is no control of senses at all. That's the nature of demoniac sense control. But when we control our senses and engage in devotional service unto the Lord, then that engaging our senses in Krishna service will nourish us. That's the real sense gratification that a devotee derives. But sense gratification on a material plane will never satisfy. So Hiranyakashipu is always dissatisfied, and he's always with uncontrolled senses. So senses, overindulgence in sense gratification will only aggravate the senses, will only aggravate one's desire to enjoy an essential plane more and more, and it will just dissatisfy the person. Because sense gratification will not give satisfaction, but will induce a desire in the person to gratify his senses more and more. So there is a constant anticipation urge to gratify one's senses, even while gratifying senses. There is perpetual dissatisfaction. So, but Hiranyakashipu is tormenting the entire universe. Then, all the demigods who were tormented by Hiranyakashipu approached the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And Vishnu started speaking to them with a grave voice, in a very encouraging note. And he said, "My dear demigods, whoever is envious of devatas, whoever is envious of me, and whoever is envious of the Vedas that give all knowledge, and whoever torments cows and brahmanas and who goes against the entire Vedic culture, such people cannot flourish. And Hiranyakashipu is doing all these nefarious activities because he was so puffed up and he became so proud of the benedictions that he received from Lord Brahma. I will definitely teach him a lesson when he torments his innocent child, our Prahlad. So when his atrocities go beyond limits and when he troubles his son Prahlad, I will teach him a lesson. You don't worry, I shall kill him. Despite all the benedictions that he received from Brahma. So like that, Vishnu reassures the demigods, and the demigods would feel very confident of the Lord's reassurance, and then they would go back to their places. And in this context, Narada Muni describes the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj towards the end of this chapter. 30th shloka onwards till 43rd shloka of this 4th chapter of 7th canto describes the qualities of Prahlad. Brahmanyah shila sampannah satya sandho jitendriyah atmavat sarva bhutanam eka priyasuhruttamah dasavat sannataryanghrihi pitruvaddina vatsalah bhratruvat sadrishe snigdho gurushvishwara bhavanah vidyartharupa janmadhyo manastambhavivarjitah. So Brahmanyah, Prahlad Maharaj is very respectful to the Brahmanas. Shila Sampannaha, Prahlad is endowed with good character. Brahmanyaha, Shila Sampannaha, Satya Sandha is very truthful. Jitendriyaha, he controlled his senses completely. Atmavat Sarvabhutanam, and he sees all other living entities just as he treats himself. So he sees an equality amongst all the living entities. Eka Priya Suhruttamaha, and he is very dear and friendly and well-wishing to everybody. And Dasavat Sannatariyanghrihi. So, he would serve the feet of elevated personalities or elders like a servant. And Pitruvat Dinavatsalaha, and he's very compassionate and affectionate to common people just like a father. And Bhratruvat Sadrushe Snigdho, and towards equals, he's like a loving brother. Guruhu Ishvara Bhavanaha, and he worships Guru as if Guru is the Supreme Lord. He gives as much respect to Guru as he would give to the Supreme Lord directly. Vidyartha Rupa Janmadhyo Manastambha Vivarjitaha. He had Vidya, education, Artha, wealth, Rupa, beautiful form, Janma, high birth. Although he is endowed with all these good qualifications, Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shri. But Manastambha Vivarjitaha, he is completely devoid of any pride or false prestige because of all these qualifications. So, in this way, Prahlad's qualities are so wonderfully described by Narada Muni to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Yudhishthira Maharaj has heard about these descriptions of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad both from Narada Muni. And Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni, "My dear Narada Muni, if Prahlad is so noble and so gentle and endowed with such great character, why Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill him? And Prahlad is such an exalted devotee that he is constantly in the thought of the Supreme Lord Krishna. He is Govinda Parirambhitaha. He is always feeling the embrace of Lord Govinda. And he is Krishna Graha Grihitatma. He is a person who is haunted by a bad planet. When some people are haunted by some ghosts or bad planets, they behave very erratically. But this Prahlad Maharaj, he is mad with his love for Krishna. He is Krishna Graha Grihitatma. He is being haunted, quote unquote, he is haunted by Krishna planet. Means he is always absorbed in the remembrance and love and affection of Krishna. So in this way, Prahlad is so exalted in so various ways. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was surprised. Why would Hiranyakashipu want to kill such a noble son? So parents are generally affectionate to children. And Prahlad is a very good child also. But how did Hiranyakashipu desire to kill him and torment him? So the answer to this question is very vividly described in the next few chapters, beginning from 5th chapter. So we have completed 4 chapters. And in these 4 chapters we have seen, in the first chapter we have seen the Lord's partiality, apparent partiality as described by Narada Muni. And in the second chapter we have seen how Hiranyakashipu was affected by the death of his brother Hiranyaksha and he consoled his relatives. In the third chapter, we have seen how Hiranyakashipu performed austerities and pleased Lord Brahma and received benedictions from him. And in the fourth chapter, we have seen how Hiranyakashipu is performing so many atrocities throughout the universe and how Prahlad was so glorious. And in the fifth chapter, we will see how Prahlad is exhibiting all this wonderful devotion to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And his teachings of Prahlad also we will see in the sixth and seventh chapters that we will cover in the next episode. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.